Alrighty. This is Parshas Truma, but we are not only going to focus on Parshas Truma because we're going to talk about the Parshios of Sefer Shemos and a little unique, interesting characteristic of Truma and Tetzava. These are the two Parshios that deal with the Mishkan. They come into play on leap years, which this year is going to be. So what we really go, when we they come into play in a special way on leap years. Tomorrow is Rosh Chodesh Adar Aleph, correct? Mm-hmm. Tomorrow on Shabbos. This year we have two Adars, correct? We always keep Purim in the last Adar, right next to Pesach. Now, before we get to talk about some of the actual information on Parshas Truma, which is the Kalim, let's talk about how Truma and Tetzava come into play specifically in leap years, which this year is. So you might have heard about something called Shovavim. Have you heard that, Shovavim? Mm-hmm. The weeks that we read Parshas, Shemos, Va'era, Bo, Bashalach, Yisro, Mishpatim, which is those, the first letters of all of those Parshas form the acronym Shovavim. Right, those weeks that we read those parshas we call Shovavim. Now, Shovavim, the Arizal really, this stems from the Arizal, and it's in the Kabbalistic, more Hasidic circles, and the more that type of ideas and those type of, you know, directions, where they take these weeks of Shovavim, and they're specifically dedicated to working on certain madrigas. For men, they deal with men's stuff, and for women, some women fast every people fast on the Sundays of Shovavim, and this is like a time period. I guess it's between Hanukkah and Purim, and there's not much doing, so it's dedicated to working on individual forms of geula, because these are the parshios of galus and geula, right? Shemos starts with the Golos, leads to the Geula. And so these parshas are for personal redemption, salvations from our own traps and prisons that we find ourselves in. Now, on a leap year, we add Tat, Truma, and Tetzaveh. So it's Shovavim, Tat. With two more weeks are added to this cycle of Golos and Geula, self-improvement, and they're called Shovavim, Tat. The question is, why are they added to the cycle only in a leap year? Now, they have to do with building the Beis HaMikdash, the Mishkan, really, and the Kalim and the Mishkan. So, and the question is really a very, simple but yet a profound question, because those people that kind of initiated Shovavim initiated it because it works with Golos and Geula. But the Geula doesn't end in Mishpatim when we receive the Torah. Ramban, and I want to read to you this, specifically states that this is the famous, famous Hakdama to Sefer Shemos. We've quoted it before. Many of you probably read it already. But Ramban states that the Sefer Bereishis is the Sefer of the Yetzirah, of the creation, not just creation of heaven and earth, but the great individuals who were formed and their legacy. And what they contributed to the world. And Sefer Shemos, then, is the actual application, how the children of these people formed into a nation that actually, you know, displayed in their day-to-day life and their national life these ideals. But this path runs through the great dramatic story of Golos and Geula, how this nation came to be, came to find who they were, came to receive a Torah. But Ramban specifically says that you cannot call the Geula just the exodus from Egypt. You cannot even call the Geula the receiving of the Torah. You must include the building of the Mishkan in the story of the Golos and the Geula, because only with the building of the Mishkan can you say there was a full salvation, because our fulfillment, we are maximized spiritually. We have our life, what we're dedicated to, what the Avos established for us, only is fulfilled through having a Mishkan in our midst, and therefore the Geula culminates in the Mishkan. So the obvious question of Shova Bimtat is if the Geula culminates in the building of the Mishkan, which is described in Truman Tetzaveh, how come they are not included in every year? Every year we read Truman Tetzaveh, it's not just that we read them in a leap year, right? In a leap year we divide them up. We don't need to put them together, Truman Tetzaveh. But the point is, if the Geula is the end story of the Gullus, and the whole time period of Shova Bimtat, for those who just walked in, the weeks that we read Shemos, Ve'era, Bo, Bishal, Chisro, Mishpatim, and now Truma, Tetzaveh, right? If those weeks are dedicated to Geula, why not have read Truma, Tetzaveh every single year? Why leave them only for the leap years? Right? Why not, why not read them, but why not include in this period of self-development also the weeks of Truman Tetzaveh? Now the Ramban, let me just show it to you in the English, in the original Ramban says, V'hine ha-galut einenu nishlam ad yom shuvam el mekomam ve'al malat avotam yeshuvu. The Geula is not completed. Okay? First of all, only with their exodus, but not until they return to their place and to the levels of their ancestors. V'kishayatzu mimitzrayim, and when they left Egypt, afal pi shayatzu mibeit avadim, even though they went out of the house of slavery, adayin still yachshavu golim, ki they were considered exiles, ki ayu ba'aretz lo lahem, they were not in their own land, nevochim ba'midbar, wandering in the desert, v'kishabo el Har Sinai, but when they came to Har Sinai, and va'asu ha-mishkan, and they made the mishkan, v'shav ha-kadosh baruch hu v'hishra shchinato b'neihem, and ha-kadosh baruch hu returned and dwelled his shchina amongst them when they built the mishkan, az then shavu el malat avotam, that's when they finally returned to the great levels achieved by their ancestors. Now here are the four operative words we're going to get back to. Shahaya sod eloka ale ohalehem, that it was the secret of godliness upon their tents. So Ramban says this, it wasn't just the Geula, and they came to Har Sinai, and then they built the Mishkan, which, let's just make an aside here to jog your memory. This is a separate discussion. We've talked about it in the past. The big machlokus between Rambam and Ramban is to the purpose of the Mishkan. Rambam seems to say that it's a way to atone for the Chet HaEgel. Ramban says no, that's additionally, of course, what it did, but it was predetermined. It was already in the plans to have a Mishkan. There's no question about it. And he brings many proofs. And Rambam also is just accedes to the fact that the Mishkan itself was part and parcel of the Jewish national life, and that there was just an added component, a big added component that allowed them to do tikkun on the Egel. And the Mishkan, after Moshe broke the Luchos because of the Cheda Egel, the Shechina departed. Remember, the Anani HaKavod left them. And when they built the Mishkan, V'shachanti B'socham, and I will dwell amongst you, that's when the Shechina came back. And that's when Ramban says, that is the final Geula, where they were able to return, or have the road, have the direction, have an ability to return through the Mishkan on a constant basis, through the kapara of the Mizbeach and the Avodah, they would constantly be able to return to the Mala, the great achievements, the great spiritual achievements of the ancestors. And that is the secret of the godliness that was above their tents. They returned to this concept of the spirituality in their tents, which is what the Imahos and the Avos originally created in their tents. And the Mishkan, was a duplicate, a replica of the tents of the Imahos, right? You know that the three Nisim in the Mishkan were duplications of the Nisim in the tents of the Imahos. So, this is the case. So, our question again, right? Why not include the weeks of Truman Tetzaveh, the culmination of the Geula, the building of the Mishkan, in the weeks of self-improvement, which we call Shova Bimtat? So, what is the unique relationship with the Mishkan, okay, and the Geula and the leap year? That's the question. What does the leap year change things? Okay, so let's talk about leap years. Where is the source in the Torah for establishing a leap year? So what we're going to do now is we're going to go back into the way back We're going to stop for a moment in our travel backwards towards the time when Moshe Rabbeinu told Bnei Yisrael about the first mitzvah, HaChodesh HaZelachem, and then we're going to go even further backwards to Yosef when he spoke to Paro and interpreted his dreams. Moshe told Bnei Yisrael, according to the words of Hashem, HaChodesh HaZelachem Rosh Chodashim, this month, it was Nisan, the beginning of the month, right? This will be always considered for the Jews the first month, for Brias Olam, for the world in general. It's Nisan, Tishrei, Rosh Hashanah. For the Jewish people, it's Nisan, right? That's how we count our time. And the pasuk goes on, Rishon hu lachem, first is this month for you, L'chodshei Hashana, to the months of the year. Rambam derives from here. There are two halachas. Number one, HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem. Number one, that you consecrate the moon according to the Beis Din. As you know, we don't do it anymore. We have no more Beis Din. But although it was very easy to calculate the way the movements of the astronomical bodies, and as we do today, you know when Rosh Chodesh is for the next a million years, nevertheless, it was consecrated by people. We held the power in our hands to determine whether we saw the moon or didn't see the moon, whether it was Rosh Chodesh today or tomorrow. So the first halacha is HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem. You decide when Rosh Chodesh is. And you've all heard Shiram on this before, that we sanctify time. Time is something we utilize, and we determine its holiness. We invest it with Kedusha. But then it says Rosh Chodashim. This is the first of your month. Rishon Hu Lachem. It is the first for you. L'chodshei Hashana. Now those words, Chodshei Hashana, are an oxymoron. They don't make any sense. And from here we get the halacha of creating leap years. Now let's go through the mechanics of leap years, how it works. Chodshei Hashana. Chodesh is applies specifically to the moon. The moon is always renewing itself. There is a big difference between the sun and the moon. The moon is associated with Chodesh, the month. You know that months are determined by the moon. They're either 29 days, or we'll talk about it, or 30 days, and it has to do with the waxing and the waning of the moon. But months are months. They do not join together to form a year. Their years do not relate to the moon. A year is a separate measurement that has to do with how long it takes for Earth to revolve once around the sun while it's rotating on its own axis. It has nothing to do with the moon. The Shana, a year, is 365 days. It is the measurement of time for planet Earth to revolve once around the sun. So Chodshei Hashana have nothing to do with each other. One is the movement of the Earth, and one really is the movement of the moon, where the sun stays fixed, right? By the way, Copernicus, the revolutionary theory, he was the one that introduced the concept of, which was a sacrilege to the Christian church, that it is not the sun revolving around us, because that would make us the center of the universe, which made a lot of sense, right? Rather, it is the us revolving around the sun, which led to tremendous amount of and the church was right to be afraid of that idea, because it led to really opening the door to secularism, mm-hmm, and atheism, because they said, wait a minute, if we're just a single planet revolving around the sun, and there's other planets we came to learn revolving around the sun, and then we came to learn that the sun is just a star. It's one of 100 billion stars, just in our galaxy. And we're just at the edge of the Milky Way. It would take you 100 million years traveling at the speed of light to get to the center of the Milky Way. And there's billions and trillions of suns. And outside of our galaxy is 100 million galaxies. And each one with a billion, hundreds of billions of stars. It's nothing. As Hermann Woke says in one of his books, he says, he puts these words into the mouth of one of his protagonists, that is a scientist, atheist. And he says, sir, the stage is way too big for the drama. In other words, the universe is enormous, and if you're telling me that it's all because one person should make a right choice between good and bad, morality, ethics, you don't need such a big stage to play out, you know, individual and little people who live a few years' lifespan. So when they said that the sun is not revolving around us, that changed everything. That led to a lot of confusion. We don't have a problem with that. We have other reasons, other explanations for the enormity of the universe. My grandfather once asked me that question. He said, why do you think the world is so huge? If you go to a tailor and you ask him to make you a pair of pants, and he says, sure, come back in a week. And you come back and he rolls out a pair of pants 1,000 miles long. Right? What does Hashem need such an enormous universe for? He says, how do you say big in Hebrew? You say gadol. Gadol is the term used to denote the midah of chesed of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He says, you want to know how much chesed Hashem has? It's gadol. You want to have a sense of what's gadol? So the universe is gadol. That's big. But that's a nice explanation. There might be other things we don't know yet, but it's certainly a very large stage. And yet, back to our topic, the fact is that in terms of years, okay, in terms of years, it has nothing to do with the moon. It has to do with the earth and the sun. So when the Pasuk says, Rishon hu lachem, it is first, l'chodshe hashana, Rambam derives from here, teaches that the halacha comes from here, that we must now take the months that the lunar year creates, and the solar year's 365 days, and we must combine them and keep them in sync with each other so that our years are a combination of the moon and the sun, unlike other societies. So you have the Arab society, which is all moon, all lunar, so that their holidays are totally different times during the year. You have a secular calendar, which is 365 days, and that's all it is. So it's a leap year of a day, and everything stays exactly on season. And then you have our calendar, which combines the solar year and the leap year and the lunar year. Now, how does it work? The sun has 365 days, correct? The moon revolves 12 times, okay? And we know, though, that it's really 29 and a half days to wax and wane. However, you can't make months half days, so the way we work it out is we have mole and chaser. Sometimes you have 30, a 30-day month, and which Rosh Chodesh then is the next day, or 2 days, and then you have a 29-day month, and which Rosh Chodesh is on the 30th day. So we have 29-day month, 30-day month, that's called mole full, or chaser, which is lacking. Now, 12 times 30, everyone can do that, 180, okay? 12 times 29, do 180 again, and minus 6, and how many days of the year do you get? 354. That is 11 days short of the solar year, okay? 6 full months is 180. 6 29-day months is 180 minus 6, right, is 174. And you put it together, you have 354 days. You have 11 days short of the solar year. So what do? So every 3 years, you add a month. However, then you're still off because you have 33 days that are missing, and you're adding a 30-day month, right? And then and that's where the mullahs and the chasers come in, how to have more months with more days to balance out. So Chazal came up with, finally, the calculations, which are that every 19 years, there are 7 leap years with extra months, and that balances everything out completely. So it's a 19-year cycle, okay? So this is the mitzvah of Rishon Hu Lachem L'Chodshe Hashanah, the mitzvah of Ibur Hashanah. Now, we don't call it a leap year in Hebrew. We call it a Shanas Ibur. What is an Ibur? Yeah, a fetus. A pregnant year, really. An Ibur is a fetus in the mother's womb. Because the concept of our leap year, so to speak, is the concept that reminds us that something is being born within something that already exists. There's a solar year, which is fixed. There's the lunar year, which is the waxing and waning. And in this process, we're giving birth, so to speak, to something new. This whole concept of the moon, which is a concept of rebirth, is fitting itself into, is existing within a bigger context, a solar year, and they're working together. Now, this whole calculation is called the sod, the secret of the ibur, of the pregnancy. Chazal call it a secret. Now, the calculations are not a secret, but what they represent, that becomes a secret. And here we're going to go into the difference between lunar years and solar years, and their major difference in understanding. And they, if understanding these two differences, understand what the Jewish, it helps us understand what the Jewish people did to the world, how we changed the world and the way of thinking. The solar year, you know, is called a shana. Like sheni, second, mishnah, to review, shone halachas, to constantly go over your halachas, okay? Mishnah Torah, sefer devarim, it's not a summary, it's not a secondary, it's not like the sum of all, it's a review of many things already in the Torah. Shone is shana. Shana, the sun, which is how the ancients counted their time, is cyclical, in that it constantly repeats itself. There is no concept, as we have with the moon, of waxing and waning, rebirth and death, right? Creation and loss. There's no such idea. It's cyclical. It goes round and round and round and round and never stops going around. That is the ancient conception of time, that time is a cycle. The Jewish people introduced, and this is the mitzvah, something which is called linear time. You will see it attributed to the Christians, to St. Thomas Aquinas, but it's not true. It is ours. We starts right here, the first mitzvah. It is such a significant mitzvah. You know, it's the first mitzvah the Jewish people ever got, is Kiddush HaChodesh and making leap years. That Rashi asks on the first, in the Bereishis Bara Elokim, why don't we start with the first mitzvah? And he's not asking why he isn't the Torah start with the first mitzvah. He knows the Torah is not strictly a mitzvah book, a halacha book. There's only a few halachas in the whole Sefer Bereishis. Obviously, we have to know the story of creation. Obviously, we have to know how it came to be that there was a Jewish people. Rashi is speaking about Bereishis. Bereishis means in the beginning of. Bereishis Briyata Olam. That word does not mean Bereishona, in first. It means Bereishis, in the beginning of something. The Gra explains, the Vilna Gaon, that the very notion of time is implied in the word Bereishis, the creation of an awareness of time. Bereishis, in the beginning of. But there are two types of thinking about time. There is the ancient paganistic primitive way of thinking about time, which is based on the sun. And there's the Jewish way of thinking about time, which is based on the union between the sun and the moon. Linear time means that things have a beginning and things have an end, and it's a line from A, point A to point B. It's not a circle at all. The difference between linear time and cyclical time or circular time is that in circular time there's no concept of a goal, of a destination, of an end point. That's huge. Because therefore there's no improvement. There's no betterment of yourself. There's nothing, there's no competitiveness to get ahead. There's no sense of salvation, of fixing something, of improving, of being better tomorrow than you were today. The Jewish people introduced the concept of looking forward. The concept of the moon is chodesh, is chidush, something new. It's small today, it's going to be bigger tomorrow, and then bigger, and then bigger, and then it's going to be full. And there's a change, there's change. There is change, time changes. Things are not the same today as they are tomorrow. When you have linear time, you don't constantly, as the primitives thought they were doing, repeat the same cycles, like the seasons over and over again, and the same rituals over and over again. You move forward. That's why there only has to be once in history a Har Sinai. You don't have to do it every year. You have it once. It teaches a lesson. It remains in our consciousness, and we build upon it. We don't reinvent the wheel. We move forward, one generation progressing upon the achievements of the previous generation. Now, all the ancient cultures, the Native Americans, the Mayans and the Aztecs in Central America and South America, Okay, all of the Norse, you know, the Nether, all the European tribes. You have the Romans and the Greeks, which was the whole of Europe. You have the Africans, the Chinese, the Japanese, all of them, only, and the Buddhists, of course, that came from that, all worked only with cyclical time. The reason they worked with this was because they observed heavenly patterns, and they associated these forces with the gods, and they believed, and there's all kinds of Buddhist ideas about the life of the Brahma, you know, 50 millions and millions, hundreds of millions of years, and they go through cycles and karmas and resurrections and all these things. They believed that the gods created the natural forces, and there was this, they believed that they were always here, always constant, and if they could, in a sense, disattach and be in the moment of constant existence, then they were not captured by perhaps the comings and goings of this world. Until today, this concept of in Buddhism of disattachment, of melding into the higher enlightened state of existence, is still very alive and well, and it actually is very motivating and captivating, because everyone sees that this concept of being in the rat race, of beating time, of trying to be competitive, accomplishing more, creates all kinds of challenges and problems and difficulties. Now, the thing with cyclical time, as it was with the seasons, was a constant repetition of the same patterns, the same services of the gods, the same cycles of life and death. We go back to Yosef now. Interestingly enough, when your philosophy is cyclical time, you are captured by time. Either you are being carried along with the flow of time, around and around, repeating the same things over and over again, but you have no capacity to make changes, to utilize this time to improve for the future time. So, Paro had a number of dreams. Yosef also had dreams. There's a big difference in their dreams. Yosef dreamed about sheaves of corn, right? Mm-hmm. He dreamed about stars and suns and moon. And what did these objects represent in Yosef's dreams? People, family, people, correct? Mm-hmm. Paro dreamed about cows coming out of a river. What do those cows represent? Yes. Time. The baker and the butler dreamed about birds and grapevines. What do those represent? Time. They dreamed about time, and Yosef dreamed about people. Major difference. Paro's dream, why was he so terrified of his dream? 7 skinny cows ate 7 fat cows, and you couldn't see the fat cows, and they all had come out of a river. What is so complicated? What is so terrifying? So Paro, not thinking in terms of time yet, okay? Yosef taught him that he should think in terms of time. That's what Yosef introduced, thinking in terms of time. Paro had no clue that this was about time. He had a whole different perspective of what this must mean based on his cyclical time perspective. In the world of cyclical time, there were forces, and they were constantly at odds with each other, and they always have been, and they always will be, and it will never change. So the way it works in cyclical time, in patterns, there was good and there was bad, and when there was bad, the good would emerge, but then it would be overtaken by bad, and then there'd be good, and then there'd be bad. And is that true? Isn't that the way the world goes? Yes. Think about human history. Horrible times. Look, there was the Holocaust years, the Second World War, then the good years, right? And then, God forbid, we hope nothing more, but everyone's afraid of the next big cataclysm, right? The Third World War. So that's how life always was. There was like the forces of darkness or evil asserted themselves, and then they somehow would be subdued. Then life and good and prosperity would advance itself once more, etc. This is how it worked. And it was always like that. And so there was a certain comfort level that it always would be like that. And this was, they came out of the river. The river is the flow of time, right? The flow of time. And this is what time is. Time gives us cycles, and we live through the cycles, and that's what it is. However, Paro saw that in this particular dream scenario, the skinny cows who represented the forces of evil, destruction, death, and doom, Armageddon, doomsday, whatever, completely consumed the forces of good, and that was the end of the dream. What if that would happen? What if this cycle that we count on, okay, all of a sudden, you know, is not so predictable? What if the forces of evil manage to actually overcome all life and goodness, anything positive, and then we're all doomed to live eternally under the forces of destruction and evil and pain and cruelty, right? As represented by these skinny cows, which look not just unhealthy, but starving and I guess, you know, this was their vision of the dark side, you know? So what does Yosef tell him? He tells him no. Elokim yane es shalom paro. By understanding the concept of Elokim, the creator of nature, you will have peace. And he explained to him, from our perspective, it's completely different. There are seven good years. These are years. These are time. You're thinking in the wrong way. There are time. There's going to be good years, and there's going to be bad years. But that's not enough. Under this original paganistic view, so in the good years we'll prosper, and in the bad years we'll suffer. That's what's normal, right? And Yosef says, no, no, no. Zman, time, is related, and this is our concept. Yosef doesn't necessarily explain it in this way, but what he's conveying to him is Zman is the concept of hazmana, right? Hareini muchan umizuman. What does muzuman mean? Preparation. I'm prepared. Time is to be used to prepare for the next moment, which will prepare you for the next moment. You're going forward. You're going to have good years, which are preparation for bad years. And those bad years, by the way, if you're smart, will become better than the good years because you'll have used them correctly and you'll progress even further because of this time. Each time period offers its own opportunities to progress further. If we would think in the ancient paganistic way, we would have a very basic question, which some kids do have. If Hashem wants to send good years and bad years, who is Yosef to interfere with Hashem's plan and tell them to turn the bad years into good years so that the bad years become for them an opportunity for the greatest windfall that Egypt ever had, to become the richest empire on earth? Who's Yosef to interfere? But that's not how we think. Hashem is not condemning us to whatever happens in time that we are its victims. All of time is an opportunity, a preparatory phase for the moment that comes after it, for the next moment, for the next day, and for the next year, and for the next, you know, the next decade. That's how we see time. It's moving forward, one thing leading to the next. That is a brand new concept. Now, the major religions that are developed out of Judaism all believe in linear time, and cyclical time is relegated today to the back, you know, to the primitive, still paganistic societies who do not ever advance, have contributed nothing major of major importance to the world. The primitive societies that remain in this type of mindset just go round and round, repeating for themselves the same cycles and patterns as they always have. However, we're talking about this cyclical time, which is the constancy, the solar year, and lunar time, which represents chodesh, movement forward, okay? And the combination of the two forces us to recognize that also the solar year, the repetition, the constancy, the consistency is also part of our consciousness. So you might want to view it in the diagram form as like a circle that goes round and round with a line through it that's projecting out of it. We somehow keep together a concept of consistency and repetition along with movement forward. We have to hold them together. Now that's where we begin to think about the concept of Tach V'Tat, the concept of these two parashios specifically relating to the leap year that exists within the solar year. Now we have, in terms of the solar year, the phrase that's used is Olam Keminhago Holich. The world goes according to its minhag. It goes according to its natural pattern, its predictable natural power pattern. That represents Shana, Shone, consistency, constancy. As we said, within it is Chodesh, Chidush, Ibor, birth, new birth. Okay? Interestingly enough, in our own lives, in our own consciousness, we feel the force of both of these kind of time frames. For the most part, we cannot function without a sense of Bereshis, the type of time Hashem set up at the outset for all of the world. A Bereshis means the concept of the beginning of a time that is predictable, a time that is based on a certain constancy. Most people depend on a schedule, on a routine, right? On a habit that they have developed. When a person is all of a sudden confronted with a brand new situation that does not fit into a routine or a pattern or something predictable and constant that they know how to deal with, very often people do not know how to manage a change, something so new, being totally thrown out of the routine. It happens all the time. People go away on vacation. This is a silly little example, but the big conversation you hear is about eating right on vacation, right? It's just a silly little thing. Or a person is thrown out of their environment, can't keep into their schedule, and if many people find it extremely disconcerting and don't acclimate themselves and all kinds of weird emotional responses to it. On the one hand, the consistency, the predictability, not just of our lives, but of the months of our year, how what to expect, the cycle of time. This is something that we crave, we attach ourselves to, we don't function very well without it. On the other hand, if a person strictly has that, and there's no concept of chiddush, of the new, unexpected, a change, why do people travel? Why do people look for new experiences emotionally, intellectually, psychologically that will shake things up, make them confront something new? People look for opportunities to have new conflicts, new situations to deal with that make them reorient. People get bored. Boredom is a huge problem, especially in our time and age where we have our basic needs taken care of so simply and so easily. People become bored. There has to be a chiddush. Too many chiddushim, people can't function. Chiddushim sometimes that destroy, people can build and build and build for 40, 50 years of their life, and in a crazy act of recklessness, looking for a chiddush, they throw it all away, change up everything. Their great talent is to constantly change and be new within a constant, predictable, organized, dependable life and system. To change things up internally, while externally things look the same. Not to change everything in all our entire situation, to change ourselves in the situation that we're in. That is why Chazal call it Sod Ha'ibor, the secret of the fetus. The leap year is called, the calculations are called Sod Ha'ibor. That while outside we are maintaining the structure of the predictable solar year, we're always keeping ourselves within those 365 days somehow or another. Inside, there's lots of changes, comings and goings, births and rebirths, continuously. We're constantly, until we add an entire new month into a solar year. It's the ability of change within constancy. By the way, that is a very hard balance for people. Either they don't change, we refuse to change, or we change in a way that destroys everything that was constant. This happens all the time. It's a human tragedy. By the way, the Greeks did not find tsunamis and earthquakes and droughts to be tragic, even if 100,000 people died. What they found to be tragic is when a human being, because of terrible choices, because not being able to deal with this balance of what should be constant and dependable and absolute, versus the changes going on inside a person. When that is not managed well, people make tragic decisions that destroy themselves and everybody around them. That's what the Greeks thought was tragic. The Greek tragedies were all plays of self-destruction based on not being able to hold on to the framework while dealing with changes and needs that were churning inside of themselves. So this balance of this shana, which represents the sun, shona, continuousness, and the chodesh, the chidush, that represents Klal Yisrael's constant renewal, that balance is unique to Klal Yisrael. It's called Sod Ha'ibor, the secret of the fetus, which is growing almost invisibly inside a mother, and nobody can see that inside was something that looks constant, is something changing and changing and changing. Now, by the way, because of the constant change that takes place and must take place in a framework of a constant life structure, we have the concept of machar, tomorrow, which is related to the word rechem, the womb. It's building towards a tomorrow, which is the source of the word rachmanus. Hashem has rachmanus on us because He's created us to always be better tomorrow than we are today, and therefore there's rachmanus, mercy, to give us another day so we can have another chance. All these words go together. Okay? This concept of the change that's taking place inside the constancy means that we can say two things at one time. We can say, we don't have to do anything new. We just want to be the same good, loyal Jews, like our parents and our grandparents and our great-grandparents and our great-grandparents and our great-great-grandparents, all the way back to Sinai, no chidushim, nothing new. It's okay to just do what your grandparents did and what their grandparents did. We don't have to be innovative and we don't have to be modern. We're just doing the same old thing. It's still good enough. On the other hand, each generation calls for different adaptations. And so that's where Chiddush comes in within the framework. Look what so-called conservative did and reform. This was a problem. Adaptation means destroy everything old. No constancy, no continuousness, no continuity. Throw it all out, basically, or rework it and change. Versus the other plague, which is never, ever, ever, ever change at all, which also leads to problems. The halacha has to be vibrant and has to adapt to new situations, with also maintaining the old. So this balance is what we struggle for personally and as a nation all the time. Now, here's the thing. Truma and Tetzaveh. They are specifically associated with these weeks of self-improvement in a Shnas Ibor, in a leap year. They deal with the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash is the culmination of the Geula. The Mishkan, we'll talk about, because really it was a Mishkan here. The Mishkan was a physical place with physical objects that was, you could come and you could go, and it stood for hundreds of years, as the Beis HaMikdash did. It was constant and predictable in this particular location, and yet, inside, there was the miraculous. There were things that were changing. There were things that were not dependent on the predictable rules and laws that are established and never changing. There were nisim. Nisim is constant change. Here are some of the nisim that you encounter when you start looking into Parshas Truma. First of all, the Aron. The Parsha gives you the specific dimensions of the Aron and the specific dimensions of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Problem. Okay? The point here is, when we find the measurements, that everybody says that the Aron itself was too big to fit in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So they explain that the inside the Mishkan, the miracle was that it was Lamala Min HaMakom. It was actually greater. It was above. It was supernatural. The spaces didn't work for the sizes of the kelim, specifically the Aron. Now, for example, the menorah. Let's move on to something else. The menorah was pure gold. Gold is soft. The Aron was three layers. It had gold on the outside, wood in the inside, and gold inside that. It was like gold filled, you might say, but gold filled means it's filled with something else. So it held its shape. But the menorah, for example, had was solid gold. Now, it was big, it was huge, and it did not crumble under its own weight. It didn't it didn't bend and distort itself and lose really its definition because of the shape of itself. It was made out of a very soft material. That in itself was considered a nace. There were other nisim also. The miracle of Hanukkah, which took place on a regular basis every single day on the menorah, was the most Western candle never burned out. There were nisim in the shulchan, with the bracha be'isa, right? The dough that always that you ate a little bit of bread and it filled you. There was a bracha in the mizbeach a ketores, where they offered the ketores, that the cloud would go straight up and then would fill the Beis HaMikdash, the Mishkan, with a anan hakavod. All of these nisim, by the way, were duplicates, as we said, of the nisim in the imos tents. Now the point here is that in the Beis HaMikdash there was clearly a combination of the building itself, the constancy, the place. And yet inside were nisim, which is chiddush, always new, something not predictable, something that did not work with the ongoing laws of nature that you could establish. They went against the laws of nature. They were as if HaKadosh Baruch Hu was willing at a moment-by-moment basis that things would change and be different than the laws that Hashem set up. This was the case, and that's what Ramban says, that when they finally built the Mishkan and they achieved the madrega of the divine spirit that rested on the tents of the Avos. So when you walked into the tents of the Imahos and the Avos, what did you see? You saw a tent. You probably saw a table with food. You saw couches. You saw all the things that were constant and that were always there. In addition to that, inside the tent, if you had the right eyes, if your eyes were more attuned to Ruchnias, then you saw Nisim that were in the tent, the Bracha Be'isa, which you would notice after you've eaten it a while later and say, that's strange, right? You saw the Anan Kasher and the Ohel, if you had the eyes to see the Anan, because not everybody could see the Anan. They represented, by the way, these represented different mitzvahs. You saw the Ner Dolok Me Erev Shabbos on Erev Shabbos. You wouldn't see that unless you sat there and watched it and noticed it, that the oil somehow stayed constant and the light didn't burn out, whatever it was. In other words, this is how it goes. In every, our eyes see what's constant, what's there, the seasons, in other words, the normal things that we can predict, that we can count on. That's what eyes, our human, natural eyes see. What the eyes of the world see. However, with Ruchnius eyes, with eyes that really come from the neshama, we see internal changes taking place. Within the constant, we see the constant chiddush. Chiddush means it's the will right now that things should not be just a reaction to or a predictable outcome of the laws that were established yesterday. When a person makes a free choice, in other words, when a person does not react to a provocation, when a person does not just continue the pattern that they have established for themselves, up till today, when a person stops, does not respond to a previous pattern that's in place, makes a choice to do something based on what's right and wrong and not because it's what they do and not it's because it's what's being provoked, that's chiddush. That's a change. That's brand new. It could be imperceptible to people that today I'm not responding to the buttons that are pushed and I'm not going to speak the way I normally speak either, whatever it is, in anger, in frustration, lashon hara, spontaneously, impulsively, not thinking. Although that's the pattern, today, brand new, I'm not responding to that. I'm stopping and making a choice about today's reaction. That's called chiddush. Nobody even knows. It's completely invisible. Nobody notices that, oh, today there was not the reaction we normally see. These things are the chiddush inside the constancy. All of these chiddushim, which are ibor, like hidden, okay, they are what makes the person move forward. They're the real secret of forward motion. So here, when we read the parshiyos of Truma and Tetzava, we deal with the Mishkan, we deal with this concept in a different way. That's when they're associated with the Shanasa Ibor, the leap year, which is the same type of idea of combining the two. when we read Shovavim, when we focus on Shovavim Tat, these weeks that are designed for self-improvement, personal geula, when we have a leap year, we add the final culmination, the Mishkan, because we don't have a Mishkan today. But in place of the Mishkan, which was a physical place where you could see this interaction between the constant and the new, instead of that, we have with us our calendar. Our calendar is actually, in a way, in place of the Beis HaMikdash. The fact that we have a leap year. The fact that we combine the months and the solar year. That is teaching us the same lesson that took place in the Mikdash, where there was change in a constant place. And it's a change in the person. It's a change in the person that gives them the ability to see the movement inside the constancy. By the way, that's why people sometimes complain or have a trouble with tefillah. Because tefillah is, the words are predetermined. They're the same every single day. It's called organized prayer. It has to be done the same way, the same words, and the same routine every single day. And everybody needs to find within that personal expression, right? And there are parts in tefillah where you can add your own words. But what makes tefillah different every single day is not the format of the tefillah. It's what we come to tefillah with, who we are each new day. By the way, we don't have a mizbeach. What is in place of the mizbeach today? Tefillah. But we also say in our homes we have a mizbeach. What is that? A shulchan. How is a shulchan like a mizbeach? It's a very nice concept, but how is a table like a mizbeach? The mizbeach was for sacrifices. The mizbeach was for atonement. How is a shulchan for that? How is it atonement? You shouldn't sit on it. But, no, but how, your table you eat at, how does that for atonement? So Chazal say, way back, the Gemara says, the way a person achieves atonement through their table is that the table is characterized by hachnasas archim, which doesn't mean, by the way, entertaining. It means hachnasas archim, people that need a place and a makom, and divrei Torah and elevated speech and the elevated atmosphere. That gives a person a kapara, acts of chesed and acts of elevation, of spiritual elevation. That brings a person a kapara, brings a person to the next level. Up, moves a person forward, right? So all of the things that took place in the Beis HaMikdash that allowed Klal Yisrael to move forward, we still have elements of them in different forms. By the way, the only way a human being feels the capacity to improve tomorrow over where they are today is if they know there's something called tshuva, that Hashem will forgive them and give them a second chance. Give a person another chance. Interestingly enough, we're constantly hungry. We constantly have to sit down at the table and eat again, and eat again, and eat again. So even if one time a meal isn't something that elevates a person and brings a person to the next level, there's constant chances to come back to the Mizbeach. And every time a person does better the next time than they did before, they are moving forward. They are making progress. And we're so used to the concept of making progress that we can't imagine living without it. But on the other hand, making progress, as we said, has to be progress within a very constant framework. There is a designated way to make progress. It's not a free-for-all. Sometimes you find this happens a lot, and we'll end with this idea. When people are coming to religion, they don't understand this idea that progress is made within a constant framework of, you know, that's already pre-established. How many people have I heard say, like, you know, I have to celebrate Shabbos my way so it's meaningful to me, so I attach myself more to spirituality, so I take my guitar and I sit by the river and I sing my beautiful songs. So that's a change from where they were, but it's a change outside of the framework. So it's all, the balance is always, we struggle with it all the time in a million different areas, and that's our secret. And so these parshiyos should be for all of us an opportunity to recombine the two forces, right, of Shana and Zman. Okay, next week I will tell you about the Aron Emes, dimensions of the Kodesh HaKadoshim.